You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. KBO player, female golfer of food, let's go. It's KBO player, women's softball player of food, Jackie. Get it right. Which team did Tom Selleck play on? I don't remember. Remember when
I think
he,
it Hanwha.
He was in, that was in Japanese baseball, I'm pretty sure. Not
oh,
KBO.
Yeah, that's right.
It's hard to pick against Asian twins on Pornhub, so that's my pick for Korean baseball.
Yeah, that's what it's,
okay.
Whatever it takes to get to your team.
Holly wants to help out. If you all want, I can start networking with them on Asia Instagram. I'll slide into some DMs if you all want to arrange a call-in interview. Okay, I'm sure you can get that done.
Y'all got to Venmo. If you got a team, you got to Venmo me your $10 so we don't have to collect from you. I've got your names. We know nothing else. Jerk is doing it.
Jerk's
also known as Jared. Yeah, he already reached into to the DMs, sent a message in, said, where do I send my money? Because he wants to get paid, too, by the way.
So Brian's favorite Bundesliga team is in League 2, FC St. Pauli. He says, I would like them because the prostitutes of Hamburg are big supporters of the team. Okay. I don't know why I would like that, but okay. So a couple of things, Lance. And it's in Miami. First of all, Don Shula died yesterday.
So I have some thoughts on that because I'll tell you what stood out to me. I couldn't believe Don Shula. You know, we're used to an era now where if you're not in your 40s or 50s, they don't like that's old for most right. young sports fans, and they don't care about who cares if that guy played. No one cares. Don Shula had so much love from Dolphins fans. I was blown away. Dolphins fans, do you know what happened? Did you hear about what happened to Preston Williams?
No.
So Preston Williams is a wide receiver for the Dolphins, right? No big deal. Just wide receiver for the Dolphins. And Preston Williams, I want to see if I can pull up his Twitter account. Preston Williams, yesterday morning, got on at about the same time that it was mentioned that Don Shula passed away. And, wow, nice job, Jared. Look at that, $10 for Kia Tigers. He already paid. So you other scrubs who are about to get rolled by the KT Wiz, send me my money. Lance-Zierlein to Venmo, send me your $10 so that we can collect the $100 because you ain't getting paid out what people don't pay. So if you want a chance to get your money, Chris, Brandon, Jared, Chance, I already know where Tyler and John work, Eric, Adam, fire that $10 in here because we're paying $70 for the winner, $30 for second place. Now, Preston Williams is a wide receiver for the Dolphins. The Dolphins – oh, good job, Eric. The Dolphins you know, they announced that Don Shula had passed away. And Preston Williams got on Twitter at about 20 minutes later. And all he said, John, this is all he said was, feeling goody, how you feeling? Right? That's all he said. Feeling goody, how you feeling? It's just one of those Twitter things where you get on and you're just like, hey, Twitter, what's up? Tell me what's good. That's all he did. That's how I take it, at least. Here's what the messages to him. Once he said, feeling goody, how you feeling? Let's see. Y'all tweeting to Preston like he intentionally went out of his way to disrespect Shula. Let's see. I know you just won Warzone, but now is not the time, Chief. Delete this. We got that. We got the GOAT passed away, my friend. The winner of the bad timing tweet of the year goes to Preston. We love you, bruh, but take this down. Don Shula passed away. Check the news, Preston. Terrible day for Fins fans. Not now, bruh. These are all different tweets. And then one guy goes, I'm appalled at some of these fans on here. Obviously, timing was bad, but it's not like he knew. Jesus Christe, y'all need to chill the bleep out. And we got another guy did the Marcus Camby get him out of here thing. You might want to delete this. I mean, dude. The guy just made one comment,
and
I know he plays
know.
For the Dolphins. He didn't even know, and people are like, delete your account. Yeah. delete this, get out of here. You may want to check the news. Why don't you read your timeline first? I mean, I can't go through all of delete this. Bad timing, Preston. Not good. We hurting, bro. R.I.P. Shula. This tweet, he's got some guy getting thrown out of the window. Not goody. Not the best time, Preston. Like, dude, the Dolphins fans went in on one of their wide receivers for an innocuous tweet that had nothing to do with Shula.
That's a shame. So here's the deal about Don Shula. Don Shula, I mean, can you remember anything about Miami sports-wise before the Dolphins? Actually, the city had...
I was a kid, but no, there's nothing.
The city had zero
seriously,
sports history.
Give me your sports history of Miami in the 60s. It starts in 72.
Right. It's,
and I
well,
don't care if you were alive
before,
or not. Well, starts, what do you mean it starts before?
Well, because they were in the Super Bowl the year before. I mean, it starts... You know,
well, I feel like it starts with an undefeated season.
Yeah. Well, any you know, great sport. Well, they were in the Super Bowl, though, the year before. So, I mean, Shula brought the city, sports-wise, to prominence. Because before that, there was zero, nothing. So, he was a coach in the NFL for 33 years.
Dude, his numbers are, no one will ever, because of the impatience of fans and organizations, yeah. His record for most wins will last for all of eternity. Yep. 328 wins.
I mean, that's just... That's
how many years, John?
That's almost 10 a year. Yeah, 33 years. Insane. He's almost 10 wins a year. And he was coaching when they only played 14 games. He was coaching when they... I don't know if they had some 12-game seasons early on when he was coaching. I think so, when he was with Baltimore. There might have been some... I'm going to look up his record. Anyway, Don Shula was just an all-time great. And somebody just said... They need to change the Coach of the Year to the Don Shula Award. And you know what? Makes some sense. He's the only four-time winner of Coach of the Year. The only four-time winner. So
Belichick hasn't won it four times?
No. No. I mean, no. He started in a 14-game schedule. 14-game schedule. And one year he had nine. He had 328 wins in 33 years, which is a 10, just under 10 wins per year, which is unbelievable, especially in a 14-game season. His first, through 1977, his first 15 years was 14-game schedule. So, I mean, you want to talk about just a great, great coach, Don Shula. Now, Miami came out with a picture of what a 15,000 fan stadium would look like. And I talked about this yesterday, and maybe I didn't explain it very well. In row one, let's say row one, you start with seats 1 through 4, and you sell those. And then you leave seats 5 through 12 open. And then you can sit, and then you can sell 13 through 16, and then so on. You leave 8 open, then you sell 4 and leave 8 open. And then in the next row, you start with seat 5, 6, 7, 8, and then leave 8 open, and so on and so on. This is a way that we actually can stay apart, and then you go up and you sell the next 3 seats, seats 9 through 12, and then go back to 1 again in row 4.
Well, but you have to do it where, like, if a family of 5, you know, you're going to have to accommodate.
Well, sorry,
you get
4. You get 4 seats. You can buy 4 seats together. And that's how we're going to do it.
John, we're going to be outraged. I'm sorry.
Well,
we need to start a hashtag, and we need to get you trending so we can cancel you.
Well, no. We're not canceling people.
We make
about
you
getting
with,
people
this idea.
Safely into a stadium, Lance, because I'm telling you.
Oh, that's right. We're not canceling people.
Well, there's already some horrific expectations about what's going to happen now that we've opened up restaurants. Where we're going to see, there was a Walmart that has like 80 employees that, so listen, when big gatherings and big places have a bunch of people together, you're tending to start to get people sick again. When you have a big gathering of people and they're close to each other in a bar like in Galveston, like they did in Galveston, this is what's going to get people sick. when you put a bunch of people in a stadium together.
In Galveston, you mean like Jackie did?
Yeah, like Jackie did. Like, yeah, just like Jackie did.
Nice job, Jackie.
Yeah. No, Freddie called in and he said, I went to a bar, it was packed. No, you don't do that, people. And you don't sit on top of each other at stadiums. You separate. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to separate and we're going to go in a third of the stadium. And we're all going to be able to get in and out. And we're going to do it in an orderly fashion where we leave the arena and we separate from each other. And we're going to do it so not everybody dies. How about that? And let's do it so we can actually go and enjoy our sports again. And we can enjoy our lives. Only a third of the people are able to go. Now, it's probably going to be the people with money. Okay, because you're going to have to, because the tickets are going to have to go up. Because we're only going to have a third of the tickets sold. So, guess what? You know what? Meet some rich friends. That's what you need to do. Go get some rich friends.
Classic. Where's Dell? Tyler, can you call Dell and tell him what John just said? I'm going to snitch on John. Get some rich friends.
Yes. Meet some rich friends so that you can go to a game. That'd be great. But here's the deal, is that's how we're going to have to do it. And everybody's going to have to actually not just climb, squeeze in the entrances so that you everybody coughs on each other. Okay? Let's do this so that we can actually enjoy this for a while and we don't have to shut down our leagues 2 weeks into them. Man, I mean, people are – we open up Galveston one day and it is packed.
Yeah,
it's
be
packed.
Smart. Don't screw this up for everybody, please. Please, yeah. Guys, could y'all not be a bunch of dumbasses, please?
New York, you're the worst city in the world for this, and what did you do? You opened up the parks and you gathered like it was a concert. Dumbasses.
I did notice that people were keeping a relative distance, but relative is all relative because when you have that many people living together, what if it's all people who have had it, John? And they're all like, I'm immune now. I'm going out.
Yeah. You don't know that. By the way, that has not been. Guess what? They've tested people that had it once before, and they got it again.
Well, no, so that stuff that's out there, I'm going to give you some good news. There is a thought that because the initial tests are so sensitive that it can still detect anything that's in your system. So it looks like you got it again, but it's still potentially in your system where it's not you're not contagious, but there's still elements or traces of it in your system. And that some of the tests are extremely sensitive and can pick it up. So that's one of the thoughts is that it's not really that you're getting reinfected. It's that you aren't officially done with it yet or that it can stay in your system longer than you think, but that you're not necessarily contagious. So.
Yeah.
You're most contagious when you're asymptomatic, unfortunately. That's why they had those 370 in that meat plant all got it because they were all like asymptomatic. They didn't, no one knew.
Yeah. Jackie G, when the G stands for Galveston, says, I love Galveston. It's my hometown. Stop talking about it.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. All right, Jackie. By
the way, Galveston VRBOs, it's not a problem. You can go rent places. They're booking up fast. If you want to go rent someplace in Galveston, the beaches are going to be packed. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I know somebody who got an Airbnb this past weekend. I think booked it on Thursday, and they're there Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to wait till July to go do that. I'm the one.
I feel like you're
care.
The wild card, and you still are like, that's the one thing about
but,
this
but no,
pandemic.
But I do it, Lance, I do it responsibly, okay? I mean, I'm not going and going to the beach with 9 million people.
Right, exactly. Right?
I mean, just do it. Be smarter, people. All right? I know you're not Jackie. Your people down in Galveston, you're just not that bright. I get
well,
it.
Well, he's claiming Boulevard, but whatever.
It's the same thing. Yeah. 713-780-3776. Let's go.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
So coming up at 8:30, the next break, we have Emma Bacchellari is going to join us from Sports Illustrated. She wrote an article. This is really... It's really an interesting article. It's called How the Internet Created a Sports Card Boom and Why the Pandemic is Fueling It. And for those of us who collected baseball cards as kids, or maybe you collected sports cards of any kind, football, basketball, my kids, Snacks has some in all the sports, they now have something. Emma's going to explain this to us. This article came out yesterday, and it says, take one part American pastime, add a twist of gambling, and then a global health crisis. Hours-long live streams of people opening packs of sports cards had already become popular enough to save the sports card business, but now interest is surging to a new level. And we'll talk to her about how this works, what the process is, because it is it's called breaking is the concept. It's called breaking, which is where you open a pack and you live stream what cards are in the pack. And I was like, I'm trying to keep up with exactly what the hell she's talking about in the article and what's going on. But, you know, I don't get the unboxing phenomenon. I think it and the unboxing is people opening presents and things like that. This guy, Chris Justice, is his name. He's like one of the biggest ones in this whole thing. He's got his own live stream that he does this with. And a feed is focused on a man's hands flipping through sports cards for hours on end. May not be exactly what you'd think of as primetime entertainment, but for thousands every day, it is. Justice was one of the first breakers, it's called, when he started out in 2007. Sells out just about every box he lists. About 2,000 people watch each of his breaks, and collectively, his videos have been viewed more than 60 million times on YouTube, plus more on Twitter. And he talks about what that means, and she'll tell us about what breaking means, what is the concept, and how is this working? Because basically now it says, here's how it works. If you want some cards, but only certain ones, not just the random assortment that comes in a long pack. Well, that's everybody, by the way. We all want the best cards. Maybe you're hunting for one of those rare inserts, or you're a diehard Detroit fan who only wants Tigers, or you want to access a portion of an expensive specialty set. You find the website of someone like Justice, which will list cases of cards at all sorts of price points. You buy into what's called a group break. A case is broken open for a group of people who will share these cards. This is frequently done by team. You sign up to buy all the Red Sox cards. Someone else will buy the Yankees. And at cheaper prices, others will sign up for the Royals or Rays and so on. But cases can be divided by boxes or done randomly until individual slots have been sold for an entire set. Then the breaker does his thing while you watch, hoping for your cards to shuffle across the screen. To this day, even after I read all this stuff, it still is hard to understand why this is a phenomenon. But I don't understand why Minecraft, watching people play Minecraft is a phenomenon either. I don't get that either.
So this saved the baseball card industry, basically.
Yeah, the sports card industry.
Well,
the entire sports card industry.
What football cards, and speaking of football cards, do you think that there is going to be a women's flag football card? Because now it's an NAIA sport, and it's backed by your league, the NFL. Women's flag football.
Good, because we're forward-thinking. That's why we're still in business, because we think of the people. And the people want women's flag football. That's what we're going to give them.
I'm not sure the people want it all that much. It's NAIA. So you have to go to an NAIA school if you're a female flag football player, apparently, because that's the only ones that are going to have it up to date. But the NFL is teamed with NAIAs. What are NAIA schools? Name one, Lance.
Let me see. Golly, I mean, I watch players from NAIA schools every year. I'm trying to think of what one of those teams would be. Marist? Yeah. Maybe
is Marist is it? I don't know, man. It seems like search by state. Okay, search by state. Let's see, what NAIA schools,
right,
in NAIA Texas?
NAIA Championship 2019. Grambling State. Grambling's in AIA.
Is it?
Yeah. Prairie View A&M is going to be in AIA.
So
school.
That conference is in AIA. Oh, okay.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like Kobe says it's like D3, although those are – the SWAC isn't D3.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, are you going to – okay, this is something for Monty. We got to get her ready for. We got to get Monty ready for – how about a scholarship – in flag football, Lance.
She's not. She's a swimmer. That's it.
There's a lot of attributes in swimming that you could bring to the flag football league. Listen, let's not poo-poo it. How about put a football in her hands and let's see?
No, she's not. She doesn't. If you saw her run, you would say, oh, never mind.
See,
that's 100%. I'm good at evaluating. Like, I can evaluate. You got to understand something. This whole draft thing has ruined my ability just to watch anyone because I'm constantly, and I'm not proud of this for Maddie to hear this, so hopefully she's not listening. I will never forget after the first year of doing this, I was at the Rockets and I'm watching power dancers. I'm like, loose hips, tighten the hips, inability to bend, better flexibility, not as explosive. That one is explosive. Like I can't shut it off. I can't. When I'm watching kids, I'm like, wow, that kid's got a really open gate. Like that kid's really going to be able to run. Oh, good change of direction. Look how my daughter, tight hipped, bad change of direction, too upright, doesn't bend well. Like I can, she is but she can swim really fast. But when it comes to moving in space, she's
long
stinks.
Torso. Torso.
She's longer, long limb, but she's thin limb. She doesn't have the ability to bend and sink her hips. She's not able to backpedal. Like, no, you can take her for your flag football team. I'm not taking her for mine. All right. I don't mean to be rude, but I'm trying to win.
Daughter, but
no,
I'm trying to win.
I gotta
say, I'm not picking. Well, thank God, Frankie's her eligibility's up because there would be no way she would make it either. She's so unathletic. It's just amazing. It's just amazing how I got. Well, I'm glad the boy and the girl are total opposites. One's tall, one's short, one's athletic, one's not. It just worked out okay. Because she doesn't care. And if she did, maybe she could go get that scholarship. So listen, people, flag football. It's the way to go. Southwest Assemblies of God is in the NAIA, says Kobe. William Penn is in the NAIA. Okay. Thanks, Kobe, for the updates on all the NAIA.
Yeah. Can we stop? Can we stop Kobe reading out the names of the NAIA teams? That's worse that's worse radio than us picking KBO baseball teams.
It doesn't get any worse. It just does not get any worse than this. Okay, so we got – okay, listen, here's the deal. Emma Bacciarelli is going to join us next, right here, to talk about how the internet created a sports card boom and why the pandemic is fueling it. That's next, right here on ESPN 97.5. Yep. In the meantime, I got to talk about my man. And I was on Barry's show last night, and it was awesome. But one of the first things was, hey, look how thick my hair is. Doc Linville did this. And, you know, you're looking in the Skype, and I'm like, hey, my hair looks good. You know what? My hair. And I could never say that before. But Doc Linville did it. Doc Linville actually made my hair, my mangy, I had looked like a dog with spots all over my head. And now it looks full and luscious. And it's because, and I'm saying that about my own hair. Yeah. Okay. And because of Doc Linville. Because of the process, because of how awesome he is, how awesome the whole team is, how awesome the process is, how just easy the whole thing is. So if you're looking for hair, the neo-grafting is the way to go. It's permanent hair taken from you, replaced up on the top, okay? And that hair, because it's taken from your side, it never falls out. So you're going to have hair. And I've got hair, and it's because of Doc Linville. And you will too. So go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. John and Lance, along with Tyler, we call it The Bench. Emma Baccellieri is with us here on ESPN 97.5. Writes for Sports Illustrated and wrote about this thing that's sweeping the nation, and it's called breaking. And it's breaking open sports cards, and it has saved the sports card business, and she's with us here to talk about that. Emma, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We appreciate you joining us here. Let me ask you this, because I'm not into this thing. Lance has been talking about this before, is people watching people open stuff on the internet.
In general, sense.
Anything. Yeah. They just open stuff and people watch them opening things. I'm not into this, but apparently a lot of people are. Are you into it, or when you were researching this story, did you find yourself interested in people opening things or no?
Yeah, you know, it was something I hadn't really looked into before. I knew it was a thing, but I had never really tried it for myself. But in the course of doing the story, I was like, you know, I got to watch a couple of these to get a feel for it. And I was surprised at how much fun it can be, especially right now, you know, no sports going on, looking for something to do. It's like kind of relaxing to just sit back and watch someone open some baseball cards and remember some players.
This sounds great. I mean, just saying that out loud sounds crazy.
I don't know.
But so does unboxing. So when I heard about the unboxing, look. When my kids were watching Minecraft, I thought, "What? Wait, you're watching someone play Minecraft that has their face?" And then I found out how much money the people playing Minecraft are making by being just glib on YouTube and having people watch them. And, of course, that's not even getting into the sports games and all that. So I was well aware of that. That's been going on. When I found out about unboxing, which is literally – and for some of you, this is you're going to struggle to wrap your head around this. Watching people open things, open boxes of televisions, of presents, little kids apparently watch other kids unwrap presents. It is the strangest thing I've heard of. And then when I came across your article, it seemed like it was a very similar process, but for sports cards, yet it's more interactive than that. Like there is an interactive feature. Explain how people can actually make money. What is the draw? What do you think the draw is for people who take part in the breaking? And I mean the community.
Yeah. And so I think what makes it different from random unboxing videos where someone is just like, you know, opening a box of toys or whatever is that a lot of times with these sports card breaks, the people who watch are able to buy into the break ahead of time. So if it's a baseball card break, you know, if you decide you want all of the Astros cards, you can sign up, put your money down, you will get whatever cards that are Astros that come out from this case of, you know, whether there's 5 of them or 50 of them. And someone else can sign up to buy all the Red Sox, someone else signs up to buy all the Yankees, and all the cards are going to be divided up that way. So they're opening the cards, you get the fun sense of reaction of like, you know, what's going to come out, like are there going to be any really big valuable cards in here, any autographs, any inserts, and if the team that you put your money down for, you know, has one of those huge cards, then, like, you've made all your money back and then some. Like, basically, you've won. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, then try again the next day and maybe you hit on it. So in that way, I think it's a lot more interactive, fun. You kind of have some skin in the game. And, yeah, there's, like, a chat room going the whole time. People get really into it, and it kind of just makes for a fun community around it.
So is there a set price, or do they bid? Like, I want to bid on the Red Sox cards. I bid 10, and then somebody bids 11, or what?
Most of them do a set price ahead of time, so just first come, first serve. No crazy bidding wars going on. But there are a couple. Every breaker kind of has his own thing, and some do, a like, a variable pricing thing like that. So,
So let's say I pick the Miami Marlins, I'm not going to get any good cards out of that, right? So nobody's going to pick that, right? Or the Yankees and the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers. That's what we pick. Everybody picks all the time.
Yeah, and the pricing usually reflects that. Like if it costs $50 to buy in for the Yankees or the Dodgers, it might cost $25 to buy in for the Marlins or the Royals or whatever. So yeah, it's usually set up to be pretty fair.
Yeah. Oh,
this has been going on for well over a decade, too, hasn't it? Which is hard. Has it been the same process, or have they changed the process?
Yeah, it's changed a little just because the technology has changed. So like when guys started doing this in 2007, 2008, you couldn't really stream it live the same way. So they would record themselves pulling open the cards and then post the whole video to YouTube for people to watch later. Rather than, now you can stream anything anywhere. Anyone can participate no matter where they are. So that's changed for sure. But the basic setup and the idea of it has really kind of been the same for a while now.
Emma Baccellieri is with us here on ESPN 97.5.
John just loves the Italian. John is Granato. So as soon as he gets anyone with an Italian name, it becomes super Italian.
Well, it's not super Italian. That's how you say it. Baccellieri.
You nailed it.
See? Emma, this one dude, 2,000 people watch every time he breaks, and he's had 60 million views on YouTube? This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really big deal for the people who are into it. Like, I mean,
why is he better than everybody else? Why is he better than everybody else at opening cards?
I think part of it is he was there first. He's one of that original group of guys who started in 2007. But I think also just from watching him, he's very calm and cool, collected. He's not one of the guys who's making a big deal out of every single card. Like he makes for kind of good background noise almost. Like if you want to just kind of put something relaxing on, have a beer, just hear him call out the names of some players. It's good ambient noise, and that would be my personal guess for why he's been so good.
Ambiance.
It's kind of crazy.
He has a good voice.
It's about ambiance, apparently. Okay.
Well, I mean, listen, we're in different times, but this is not really an excuse. Well, the pandemic has maybe increased it, but this has been a thing from before the pandemic. This has already been a thing. I think it is interesting that, baseball cards, I collected baseball cards when I was a kid. My dad did. To this day, I've got a Jackie Robinson card, and I've got a Roberto Clemente that I got from my dad whenever I went to Kansas when I was a kid. He had some of his. But I'm curious about basketball and football, if these are also things that Chris takes part in. And what about basketball, football? Are there other leagues that are becoming bigger with this breaking phenomenon as well? What about the sports other than baseball?
Yeah, that was one of the things that surprised me in working on this for kind of similarly, I collected baseball cards as a kid, but nothing else, and hadn't really paid attention to it in a long time. But yeah, the market for basketball and football cards now is huge. Kind of similar to baseball, it's super driven by rookies. So this year for basketball, they had a huge card year with Zion and Ja. It's not as big as baseball cards, but it's much, much bigger than it used to be.
So you just want, you could, you never know what rookie you're going to hit on, right? If you grab those cards, but you want a Zion for sure. I mean, you got to have a Zion. That's neat.
Exactly.
Emma's with us here on ESPN 97.5, and we're talking about breaking. And Pete Alonso was on. I mean, they did this at AT&T Stadium at Jerry Jones World.
Yeah, they did. They had the 19 biggest breakers in the game. Top brought them into AT&T Stadium to open up 1 million cards for the biggest break in Guinness Book of Records setting history. And they did it. They opened 1 million cards, which took a really long time, but they did it. So, yeah.
Wow.
It's so crazy. When I was a kid and we talked about breakers, the first two names that came up was Turbo and Ozone. The first two names were Turbo and Ozone. breaking one and then breaking two. This is completely different.
The
breakers now don't have cool names like Turbo and Ozone, and there's no dances with, you know, with brooms and all this stuff. There's no cardboard on the ground. It's just a bunch of dudes hanging out, watching people sift through cards online.
Right.
So that is insane to me.
So do these guys sell all of the teams, or like so how did they make the money off people bidding for the Red Sox cards or the Yankees cards or whatnot? The people that are actually breaking, do they get a piece of expensive cards, or do they just get the leftovers that weren't bid on? How does this work?
It usually works where they get a cut of it. And, you know, for a lot of the guys who do this really seriously, like, this is enough to make a full-time living from, just by having so many cards where you're getting a cut of just so much. You're breaking open, you know, multiple different cases a day. You're on camera, like, for hours every single afternoon and night. And together that makes enough that, yeah, it's a full-time living, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, it's basically just, it's kind of like running a card shop, but doing it online, and you're opening every single pack before you sell it.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. They must be pasty too. They don't get out much. They're in front of a camera all day.
Making a living. You want to talk about recession proof? In the world, like, I'm just opening cards. This is as recession proof as it gets.
Right.
Yeah. And made for quarantine.
What's up next for you? I'm curious, in your space as a writer, you know, obviously every day we have to come up with different topics and new topics. Today we all chose Korean baseball teams. So I'm literally right now on Amazon ordering my KT Wiz shirt because I got to represent. How hard is it for you in this space, or what are the challenges that you're facing in terms of coming up with what your next assignment's going to be?
It's definitely tricky. The Korean baseball helps. I picked my team. I think I'm going to be a Dinos fan.
Oh, nice.
It's a challenge, but I think there are still a lot of really interesting stories out there to tell. I mean, everything from baseball cards like this to just what players are doing physically to stay healthy, like mentally to manage all of the stuff that's going on. You know, there are just all sorts of different stuff that you'd never get a chance to really stop and think about during a regular season that I'd like to try to tap into a little more. And, you know, hopefully if we're lucky, you know, another month, 2 months, 2.5 months, we won't have to be digging so hard for stuff. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty to write about. There'll be, hopefully in a couple of months, Emma, you'll have plenty to write about. Emma Baccellieri, and it's breaking. And it's on SI. She writes for SI. Well, we appreciate you hanging with us, and thanks for the info, and congratulations, and we're looking forward to your next article.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good one.
All right.
Thanks.
About Chilieri right here on ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, you're more than welcome to do that. 713-780-3776. Taking one here. Don't go anywhere.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Ocho's been waiting a while. So let's talk. He wants to talk about Scottie Pippen. Let's get him in here. Hey, Ocho.
Hey, what's up, fellas? I wanted to piggyback on the earlier caller about Pippen. I agree with him. I don't want to slam him because he was very good at what he did. Very good at what he did, a very good role player. But a lot of people think he was some elite player, offensive player or whatever. He was an elite defensive player. Very good in transition. And, you know, he had an okay offensive game, but he wasn't an elite all-around player. This guy played with, like, 17 years, and I think out of those 17 years, only four times he averaged 20 points a game. That's not elite as far as offense is concerned. And let me tell you who Pippen was. You remember when Kawhi Leonard was in San Antonio before he developed his offensive game, when he was just a claw? Everybody knew he was a great defender, good in transition with the big hands and whatnot. That's basically who Scottie Pippen was his entire career. If Kawhi had never developed his game, he'd basically be Scottie Pippen. And all these people talking about, you know, the Bulls had a stacked roster, that's just not true. They had Michael Jordan and a bunch of, you know, second-tier players, very good role players who accepted their roles and did it well within that great system. They came together to form an elite unit, unlike some other people who handpicked their players and picking the best players off other teams and you know, holding off-season summit meetings to establish an all-star team. Michael didn't do that. He didn't do that. He didn't play with an elite offensive player his entire career. And so that's just this misconception about the Bulls, about Michael Jordan in comparison to LeBron James, and I just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah.
And I'll hang up and listen.
Yes.
You know, guys,
go ahead, John.
Right. Guys had guys had roles, like you said. And Scottie's was to run. Right. Scottie scored points with the Bulls, 20 a game. But when Phil Jackson said, you know, we're going to go to the triangle offense, Mike, and you're not going to lead the league anymore in scoring, well, he led the league every year in scoring, even with the triangle offense, because he was that good. Now, he did have some – Craig Hodges was a great outside shooter. Steve Kerr was a great outside shooter. Paxson, he had guys – but they had their roles, just like the Rockets had. You know, they put guys around Akeem. You could say about the same thing about the Rockets with Akeem until Clyde got there. Clyde was an elite player. But you know what? They had role players around Akeem Olajuwon, and they won. And they won championships. Yeah, Scotty. This whole Scottie Pippen thing is he was a top 50 player, but he certainly isn't what Scottie Pippen thinks he is.
No, Scottie Pippen was, you know, Scottie was not a creator. Like, he was not really, he could get to the rim off the bounce, but that was not really what his strength was. And I think when you look at the Bulls, Reinsdorf did a good job of fitting in shooters. It was whether it was Craig Hodges, whether it was Paxson, whether it was Kerr, and you know, it kind of changed over the years, the different guys. Now, the second iteration, when you added Tony Kukoc, that was a legitimate – Tony Kukoc was a legitimate offensive threat. Pippen was never a plus offensive player. He was a very average offensive player at best. And by the standards of, like, 80s basketball, he was below average. By 90s, I'd probably put him into – you know, he could play into meat grinders too. But he was not a creative offensive player. Jordan really did have a – but so did Dream. That's the other thing. Dream had rosters of pretty average guys relative to NBA superstardom. On this first championship team, Otis Thorpe was a one-time All-Star, I think, but he didn't have All-Stars. Robert Horry, Mario Elie, Otis Thorpe, Mad Max, Kenny. I mean, he didn't have a bunch of All-Stars with him. That was the thing that made Dream special. The next year, he got Clyde, obviously, and Clyde would be the equivalent of a Pippen, only a better offensive player than defensive player. But Jordan was not. No, that team was not filled with offensive players. There was no Chris, even a Chris Bosh. Although I'd put Clyde ahead of a Chris Bosh, but you had Dwayne Wade. I mean, come on. Dwayne Wade is a phenomenal offensive player next to another phenomenal player in LeBron. Pippen was a great defender. He was not a phenomenal offensive player. Then again, the times didn't call for you to have phenomenal offensive players for much of those years, John. You saw how infrequently the scores are in the 100s. It doesn't happen very often in those docks.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah. I mean, they obviously they had the low scoring game. There were some games that they put up some points. But yeah, hey, listen, you scored 20 back then. It's 25 today. It's 26 today. And Scotty got his, but Scotty got his, and we saw it when he left Mike. When Mike wasn't there anymore, he didn't score. He didn't have the ability, like you said, to create. He wasn't an elite player after he left the Bulls. He was with the Bulls because he brought, you know, defensive prowess, and he was able to get baskets on a lot of times. You watch Scotty it's a lot of his stuff is on the breaks. A lot of his stuff was on fast breaks and getting open because of the triangle offense and scoring in the lane because of the triangle offense. But that's neither. You know what? I'm Scottie Pippen, whatever. Scottie Pippen lost me when he lost that ball against the Lakers here. He lost me a long time ago. Bama Papa Joe
Scotty
is here. What's
was
up,
a crybaby too, bro. Scotty was also a crier.
Yeah, he was.
Remember how
bad
he cried in Houston trying to get it? So he just went right at Barkley because he knew he could get out of town.
Well, yeah, and oh, by the way, he never took. You know what? He was blaming everybody else after that Lakers game when he's the one that fumbled the ball out of bounds. He blamed everybody else. That post game, I'll never forget. I was just like, you're a POS.
Dude, I kind of think Scotty is really fortunate he played with Mike, to be honest with
you. Oh, yeah.
Great player, but he's thought of much higher than he probably should be.
No. And he said he would have been, if he didn't have Mike, he would have been the best player in the league. Nah. Sorry. Sorry, Scott. And I'm not calling him Scotty anymore. His name's Scott.
That's fine.
Bama Papa Joe, what's up?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to give a little history about the sports card industry. I don't know. Remember when we were kids, cards back previous 1980, those cards were always usually printed out based on the distributor's need or how much they wanted at their stores. And then once they were done, the printers stopped making any more and broke the plates and then moved on to the next thing. Well, that's like the old Mickey Mantle. Everybody's looking for the rookie Mickey Mantle that's a fortune because, again, those were limited production, even though there wasn't anything associated with exactly how many were made. Now you go into the 80s and 90s, all of a sudden production would base be on volume. So back in like 89, when Ken Griffey Jr. was a rookie, the following year they didn't break the plates. They said, okay, well, everybody likes Ken Griffey Jr. rookie. Let's make more and more. Well, that diluted the value of all those cards. So all of a sudden, no one wanted them anymore because they were just weren't even worth the value that they were printed on. Well, then they moved forward into the 2000s, and they said, okay, how do we generate the excitement? So they started putting serial numbers on cards. So now everybody's looking for that one of one or one of five or one of 50 or one of 75. That's the value. That's the lottery ticket that everybody's watching for on these videos. Because the paper, 90% of the stuff that they're looking at, they're going to end up throwing away. A lot of the dealers don't even ship the paper regular cards, the veterans or the rookies, unless it's in chrome format or if it's in serial number format. So a lot of that just gets thrown away.
So, you know, it's interesting
because the
people
that are breaking even because they're purchasing it from like Topps or Panini or anything like that at a value. And then they mark up their teams based on getting a margin back.
That's what it is.
The ones that lose money are the ones that put it up for auction for either a specific team or a specific person because they can go by player too and then list that as an auction. And you're looking for just, I want all the Altuves. So that's the only thing you're going to get is Altuve if you bid for him. But again, you might not get anything that's serial numbered that brings the value back to what you purchased.
Gotcha. So I've got a bunch of baseball cards from which ended up not being a great era for baseball cards, which is the 80s. And I had all my rookie Tony Gwynns, you know, and rookie Eric Davis at one point. I've got Roger Clemens rookies and I thought they would be, and at one point when I used to check out Beckett's, you know, oh, this card's worth a lot. There was one where the Mark Aguirre was worth a lot, an Olympic card. But I've got Barry Bonds rookie cards, but everything plummeted because of how many that were printed. I guess that's one of the reasons why, because so many people had, it's just a supply and demand thing. But, those cards were just, they ended up not retaining their value. What's funny is my dad, I've got either a 1955 or 56 baseball card that is the commissioner of baseball at that particular time, I think. And it's actually one of the most valuable cards I have. I don't collect cards anymore, but I still have all these cards. Like I said, I've got a Jackie Robinson, Red Shane Deist. I've got Roberto Clemente. Used to have a Koufax, but somebody jacked it from my house when I was 14. I was a little hot about that. But or either that or I lost it, which is also possible.
You put it on your spokes.
No, I never did that. But my dad taped his baseball cards into a notebook, and so when they took the tape off, you know, it kind of it kind of, you know, screwed up something. Like, as a kid, what do you, as a kid, when he grew up in the 50s or whatever it was, when the, 56, like, he had no idea. He didn't care about that. They're still in really good shape, other than you can see tape marks on some of them.
Well, that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing for collectors.
It's a terrible thing.
Yep.
I'm caught between whether or not I want to give my cards to Snacks, who's a big sports fan, or if I want to just sell them and be done with them.
Yeah, but, yeah, what is that? Is Bama still on there? What is that?
Nah, he's gone, I think.
Chase just sent us the Billy Ripken card that has the F face on the bottom
money.
Of the bat.
It's worth a lot.
A lot. A lot. Man, I want one of those Billy Ripken cards. How about Billy Ripken has a valuable card? He was just a mediocre, at best, a mediocre major leaguer.
Before we get to a break, I want to mention something. Coach Clay, Thomas Clay, who comes out to our Christmas parties every year, the quarterback, he said the Bulls were a dominant defensive team across the board. They could lock you down, and they had MJ at crunch time. You know, one of the things that I know, I know practice gets clowned, like practice, ever since the Allen Iverson, and people like to act like practice isn't important. You know why the Bulls are great?
Yeah,
because they practice like maniacs, and their best player made it important. And if you didn't go hard in practice, you would get punched in the face.
Yes, and you did get punched, or a ball thrown in your face, or something in your face.
Something went to your face.
Raheel joins us on the other side. He joins the fray on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5. In the meantime, Chastang at home. You can pick up, you can get your vehicle delivered to you. You can buy your vehicle online. They will show you, they will FaceTime you or walk you around the store, and you can have a virtual tour of all of the cards if you don't feel like you want to go into the store. If you do want to go into the store, it's clean. They've been doing they are always sanitizing. They are keeping social distancing. They are staying healthy, and they want you to know that it is a safe showroom to come and look at your vehicle. But if you don't want to go, that's fine. You can buy it online. You've been able to buy cars online at Chastang for years anyway, where other dealerships wouldn't do that because they always want to upsell you. The first thing that they'll ask you about, one of the first things that they'll ask you about, is where you need to be on your payments. And right now, 84 months. 84 months, you can do 7 years of no interest. You can do nothing down. You can do no payments for 6 months. This hopefully will get you through these tough times. So if you want to trade in your car right now, they'll pick up your car. If you need your car serviced, they'll pick it up. They'll service it. They'll sanitize it and bring it back to you. It's about service at Chastang Ford. It's on 610, just two exits east of 59 on 610, Homestead, not Hempstead, 5 minutes from downtown. You're looking for that Ford car or truck. It's Chastang Ford.
Loaded, ready, rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.